Joining me on Impact Catalyst today is Ellen McDonald, who's the Executive Director of Florida Resurrection House. Welcome, Ellen. It's nice to see you.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you.
So I really love these niche projects, and they have such a unique opportunity to be really focused, working with a small group, but in really, really deep and in interesting ways. And you've been doing this for a while. So let's start with just a little bit of an overview of the Florida Resurrection House.
Yeah, so Florida Resurrection House is actually a little hidden jewel of Pinellas County, I call it. It was actually started in 1987. So we have been in the community for over 33 years. And in that time, it began as a coalition of Episcopal churches that recognized cold night shelters were not providing enough care for families. And so they started dreaming about what would happen if we gave families the space and time to truly work on life change. What that has evolved into is a nonprofit, a 501c3, that's working to end the cycle of generational poverty for families in the Tampa Bay area. So we are right here behind St. Anthony's Hospital. We have 15 apartments where families come and live with us for 1 to 3 years as they do holistic, hard work of changing their life.
Wow. So with that 1 to 3 year cycle, which is such a long cycle, and with just having the limited space, it must be a pretty rigorous selection process to figure out who gets the benefit of that. How does that process work?
No, it really is. We had a wonderful moment of growth this year. I just began as the executive director the first week in January. So it's been such an adventure, especially in 2020, learning about this great resource. And one of the most important things we did this year is streamlined our intake process, where we have a new online component where people can apply online and my case manager can start reviewing their applications. But because we've been doing this for such a long time, combining that software with the old knowledge kind of gives us an idea of the families that are ready to do this work. So you're right. We currently have a waiting list longer than if every apartment was empty, and it's not every apartment is full. So when our families come in, they might have been sitting waiting for this opportunity for a while. They keep in contact with our case manager. She gives them recommendations of goals to be working on. So some of it is, which of our families in the time that have been on the waiting list have worked through some goals that are achievable even when they are not here, like accessing other service partners and connecting with 211. We also look for families who have a goal in mind for their career and their education. 100% of our participants, when they live here, are engaging in career and educational training.
That's great. And so let's dig into that a little bit more, because you use the word permanent change. You talk about breaking cycles. You do have this 1 to 3 year investment and collaboration or partnership with the families. So what are sort of the elements that you feel or you have found to be the most necessary to actually break the cycle? And then how do you keep those going even beyond those 3 years?
Sure. Yeah. There's been so much that has changed over this year, but a lot of the basics remain the same. The first one is many programs just like ours do a great job of focusing on learning how to effectively budget, setting priorities and goals for your finances, and achieving educational measures that will give you a living wage, right? We know there's just certain employment opportunities that will not support a household of 3 or 4. So we talk with our participants realistically about achieving educational goals that will afford them a job that can pay at the rate that they need to support their family. But we know that families don't succeed only on finances. I mean, most people in their life will experience acute poverty. And so acute poverty might be the idea of the poor college student, right? Or it might be that you lose a job for a time. This is a time when your income is very, very tight, but there is an end in sight of when that might be over. We're not talking about that. We're talking about generational poverty. And when you get into that, we're looking at families who have experienced poverty in at least two generations of the same family line. And so we take two approaches. The first one is called trauma-informed care. And that's where we look at every family and we say, what is your life experience that has led to the place we're in now? And there's this incredible study that has been created. It's called ACEs for short, and the long name is Adverse Childhood Experiences. The ACEs test has helped us understand even better how trauma in ages 0 to 18 will actually affect long-term physical and mental health. And so we are primarily an organization that believes it's not just about knowing how to make a budget or finding a career that will pay you well, but it's also about healing from the trauma that you've experienced in life. And so we provide a holistic program, including trauma therapy through our community partners, so our families as a whole can engage in creating a healthier path forward. The other part of that is called the two-generation model. Many programs serve just mom or dad or just the children. But instead, we take a model where parents and children are served at the same time and they're moving towards wholeness together. So there's a whole family approach to this long-term work.
Wonderful. And when you talk about trauma, obviously there's the, you know, the classic types of trauma with violence or emotional abuse. Do you expand that definition to really just the state of living in poverty or in oppressive environments? When you say trauma, how wide does that definition go?
You know, the definition of trauma has been worked through in the mental health and the medical community for so long, and there's a lot of ways that it can be defined. But the ACEs test actually defines it through a certain amount of questions. And there might be some things that they define as trauma in early life that a lot of us have experienced, like the divorce of your parents. That might be one. And then, you know, you hit on others. Did you see violence in your household? There's obvious trauma indicators, right? Like there's the sexual or the physical or the verbal abuse. But then there's also other things like, did your family move around a lot? You know, did you lack stability? Did you experience a time when food was sparse? So there's absolutely the kind of trauma that experiencing poverty brings along. And then there's some that might be relatable to all of us, like divorce or separation or a death, right? A parent dies or a grandparent.
So when you think about, or at least I think about sometimes programs as either trying to get from, sort of below zero, negative one to zero, and then some programs trying to get from zero to one. And that zero line is sort of relative to, people's life experience, because, it may be, some might think that just, getting that first job is kind of getting from that negative one back up to zero, just in sort of standard living. But then you're also taking them, you're kind of doing both, because you're saying, just getting that job isn't enough. We're going to raise our expectations to this level of thriving that, goes beyond your sort of internal baseline. And so, is it a challenge to get people to, expand their mindset and their expectations to these places that they may not have been exposed to?
I think one of the most beautiful things I see happen in this program is that our participants, once they start feeling stability and safety, all of a sudden they start to dream again. I would say the majority of the people that move on our campus, they're already working really hard. They have employment. They're working probably more hours than you or I might, but it's just not enough money on a per hour basis to support a family. And so when you are spending all of your time working just to pay for food and shelter and maybe still not make it, it's really hard to dream about what you're capable of. And that's what starts happening. We usually see that magic happening around 6 months, where there has been enough stability and safety groundwork done that we start having discussions of what would it be like to get our degree. What would it be like to go to Pinellas Technical and receive a certification? And then even it's more fun around year two when we see these educational goals being achieved and they start realizing, not only can I go to an interview, but I can ask for what I'm worth in that interview. And we just had a participant recently. She achieved her goal to become a licensed practical nurse this summer and went to her first interview and came back gleefully telling us that not only did she ask for what was being offered, but she asked for $3 an hour more than what was being offered and it was accepted, right? And so it's just this picture of, I can do these things. I have the time and the space and the gift of being somebody who dreams again and achieves those dreams.
That's wonderful. Well, it's great work. It's important work. Thank you for doing that. And again, I love the concentrated, being able to just put so much care into, the 15 families. That's really unique and neat. Final question is kind of a big one. As you've been on the front line of working with these families and especially in the intake process and looking at all the families that could benefit from being part of the Florida Resurrection House, can you sort of, if you had to sort of describe what you see as the biggest limiting factor or downward pressure on just generally the demographic of folks that you're working with from rising up, how would you articulate that?
I would say every family is unique. Mm-hmm. What we have learned in the work we do is the path from poverty to thriving, it's not a straight line, and it's not the same one for every family. Now, there are some general buckets that we see that really have to be filled before we start achieving self-sufficiency. I would say access to higher education is such a limiting factor for so many of our families. And it is incredible as they live on our campus, St. Petersburg College and Pinellas Technical gives access to education at low or reduced rates. So being able to get what you need to even work in a career that will pay you in a living wage is a huge barrier. Another one is really this sense of trauma. We all know in our lives that what our parents taught us, our past experiences, it shapes our current reality. It shapes the decisions we make and the people we associate with and the path that we're on. And being given the time to actually work on your mental health, I believe it should be a basic right for all, but it's not. And so giving families a moment where they are able to regroup and reassess, what has my life been like to this moment? What was I taught that was, maybe not something I want to carry on into the way I'm parenting my children? It really creates a new pathway. I see children on my campus expressing their emotions so articulately that, their parents, when they first moved in, weren't even doing themselves. And so seeing the evolution in the children really shows me that dealing with learning about boundaries, learning about how to handle our emotions, learning what it means to be a whole person, not just somebody who goes to work, but somebody that lives an entire life, is really the biggest change I see. And I believe it's what creates the permanent self-sufficiency.
That's wonderful. And the most poignant thing I take away is just if we can just, get folks up to a baseline, even in just 6 months, they can go from suffering to dreaming. I think that's a really nice illustration of why these types of programs and getting access to education and all the good work that organizations are doing are really worth it, because the transition can be quick and successful.
Absolutely. I think so often nonprofits are reporting on numbers of people served. And in that arena, we're probably never going to be the big winners, right? Like we're dealing with small numbers at a time. But part of that means that the families here are given such a unique chance to assess their entire lives. There's these moments where kids get to be kids again, and parents get to have a supportive community of people around them that are going through the same thing and that are seeking the same goals in life. And I think that that sort of experience almost can't be quantified. It has to happen on such a small level, because community, we know in our own lives, community is the key to our success. And for these families, it's the first moment where they feel a helpful, loving, successful community. And that is why we love our small little group of 15 families.
Wonderful. Ellen McDonald, Florida Resurrection House, thank you for joining us on Impact Catalyst.
Thank you for having me.